Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studio by the lake.
Yep.
Yeah.
that's where we are.
That's where well, to be fair, we've been apart for a little while because
we recorded the chicken.
The chicken thing really took it out of us.
Yeah, we're recovering from our fried chicken.
Yeah, can I say when I went back and listened to that? I remember when we recorded it. It felt there were moments when I felt like we're working hard here.
Yeah.
When I listened back, I could tell the moments when we were working hard.
It was like people are out of breath or something like that.
I think it's you taking all that protein. Your body works super hard. It's like when animals eat, they always sleep.
Right, as we're talking about this, I haven't had much to eat today, and now I want to go get some fried chicken right now.
Well, which has your opinion changed from the show as to what
chicken? No, you know, I forgot we were going to talk about this. So, you know, you left behind, there were some left behind chicken, maybe less than
chicken bits, right? Yeah.
What I found interesting, so I was having that over the next day or so as leftovers, and it was cold, and we talked about how, you know, hey, that's the great thing about fried chicken. You can have it hot, you can have it cold, et cetera, et cetera. Or to quote the Southern Culture on the Skid song, you can eat some now, you can eat some later, you can have some with your french fried potatoes, something like
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah, that sounds like them.
The Popeyes still remained good.
Okay.
The Astro Donuts and Chicken was as cold chicken, that was better than the Popeyes was.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's because presumably it's made with less going on, you know, like less technology. I assume it's a much more
Remember with the Astro Chicken.
Fire, less treatment, you know.
With the Astro Chicken, I do remember that my immediate reaction at the time was, well, it just tastes nice because it's hot.
Right.
So it is interesting that you've said that when it was cold, it tasted better.
And it might just be that like the meat held up better, the fry coating held up better, what it was. I don't think any of the other, like, we didn't keep any KFC and the Chick-fil-A wouldn't have kept. So I think those are really the only two. But out of those, the Astro moved up a little bit. And also, by the way, I also meant to mention, there's an article this week in the paper here in the Post about there's a new chicken place in D.C. called something Biscuit. I can't remember.
Okay.
Southern Biscuit, something like that. Only open for breakfast and lunch. And the guy who makes the chicken there, or maybe the guy who opened this, was a former chicken guy at Astro Donuts.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so
like,
some
it's kind of like the barbecue
rival,
thing now.
Yeah.
Like, the barbecue's gotten so popular that the people who worked at barbecue at this place, Hill Country, you know, in D.C., which is an offshoot, they've started their own place. You know, it's all building. So we're ahead of the wave here. I'm thinking fried chicken is next, you know, for the barbecue craze.
Yeah, I was going to use the word renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
That it was one of those things that suddenly mainstream, you know, as we had talked on the
show.
Once
you give it a renaissance, you can charge twice as much as you used to charge for the same stuff.
So basically, fried chicken is now going to be a scam.
Exactly,
so.
Right, yeah.
So anyway, that was chicken.
Yep. And so now we're back, and we're going to talk about a few other topics, I think, starting with...
Let's start with the news.
Things from space.
Things from space. Do you want to start with the senior science advisor
That's
of
right.
the pod?
Senior science advisor, who will be making an appearance later on. Senior scientist, not science advisor.
Okay.
Although he does provide advice, his title is senior scientist in real life and in podcast life.
Okay, because he only advises us. He doesn't do anything science-wise. Like, he's not out there doing experiments on our behalf. He's just telling us about other experiments.
I mean,
he could, okay, all right. Yeah. We need to get him assigned.
He sent an article. He gets, he's very clear, he gets the subscription to Science Daily. So if you want to have a Science Daily subscription, you must get emails, because I oftentimes, when we get these things, and what they are is, like, instead of like an article in a newspaper, they're abstracts of papers, you know? So they're saying, hey, this has been this paper released. And so it's much more primary research. And the title is, Could Interstellar Ice Provide the Answer to the Birth of DNA?
Okay.
And so they're basically saying they believe that molecules brought to Earth in meteorite strikes could potentially be converted into the building blocks of DNA.
Okay.
And we don't need to get into the deep science of it, but it's something about converting amino acids to DNA, and they're...
Well, we don't need to get into the deep science of it.
Things that are in the ice crystals from outer space very clearly could be the catalyst for the building of DNA here. And interestingly enough, when you follow the article, and this is researchers at the University of York, which I assume is in Britain.
If it's York, Britain.
Yeah, it's not New York, University of York.
Could be York, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, shown that molecules brought to Earth meter. There's links in it to other articles. It's not like they didn't just suddenly come up with this idea. People have talked about this before. And interestingly enough, this fits directly into... It would make the plot of Prometheus, not the plot, but like, remember the Prometheus scene at the beginning where the alien creature basically decomposes himself, like pulls out his sort of genetic material and throws it into the river, so to speak.
Oh, is that what was happening?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you just had some infection and it killed him.
No.
The problem with Prometheus is I don't understand what's going on.
It's about like the theory is he was seeding the earth with DNA, which led to life. You could look at that as a metaphor for this actually happening.
Okay.
It would fit with your theory.
Yes.
Of us all coming from another planet. Although your theory is more like literally as people, we came from another planet. And that's why our backs go so bad.
Actually, no, that was you claiming that, my theory, I can't remember if you were trying to give credence to my, I don't get that.
See, I talked about.
Come to me right now. I don't get that specific in my theory.
No, I think we talked about how like, people have a bad back, and part of that is
because
we
were
never designed to walk upright.
That's right.
Because like animals are designed to be horizontal, and now you take a spine and you stack it up. But somehow you had turned that into the idea that people, like in their current form, had been dropped here as.
I've always taken that position, and I do want to say this.
Isn't that the plot of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy or something?
Ooh, Earth.
Everybody came from another planet, and they sent all the middle managers to what ended up being Earth. Like the people who sanitized phones, I remember was one.
I haven't read Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide for a while. But isn't that goodbye and thanks for all the fish?
Yeah,
because isn't the point the dolphins are the smartest people?
It's possible I'm missing my comedic science fiction stories, but there was something like that where they drop people. Senior scientists would know because. Recently, do you know there's a new Hitchhiker's Guide book coming out?
Oh, there is. Who's written it?
Considering the author is dead.
Yes,
it's somebody. I forget who it was. They said somebody who was involved with the earlier, like maybe the radio show or something. Okay. But it was this person's been authorized by the estate to write the new story.
Oh wow, yeah. That'll be. Although you know something, and we're now veering off topic as always. Continuation novels written by other people. I think if you're doing like a Tom Clancy thriller. I think it's probably easier to sort of do a copy or homage of that.
Right.
Whereas I would have thought...
Because they're encapsulated stories. I mean, that's the whole thing. Yeah. With the Tom Clancy thing is you take, Jack Ryan. Yeah. And you put him in a new context.
And it doesn't matter. And anyone can write
that. But the Hitchhiker's... I do want... Because the Hitchhiker's Guide had an arc. The first three had an arc. Then they come up with another one. And now they're like...
Well, but also want to say is I would also think that Hitchhiker's Guide... Because Hitchhiker's Guide, there's so many nuances in how it approaches science fiction in terms of its sense of humor. I would imagine that would be a lot harder to replicate someone other than the original novel than just putting Jack Ryan in another action story about such and such. Right. And so that's pretty brave that's going to happen.
So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, can I shoot some? Well, I want to have a go at these scientists who've done all this deep research. I've been saying this for years. I haven't done any research because it's common sense to me. It is. I have never... My belief that we all come from somewhere else is so deep-seated in me.
Like it comes from somewhere else.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is I know that probably scientist of the pod probably feels at some moment that, hey, I'm really excited to endorse Zeph's position. But I'm like, I don't need to have my position endorsed.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been obvious to me. This isn't like the idea that life came from out of the planet.
But it's the building blocks of life.
Well, the things that made the building blocks. The research team showed that amino nitriles could have been the catalyst for bringing together the interstellar molecules from aldehyde, acetaldehyde, glycoholidide, blah, blah, blah. Before life began on Earth, combined, these things produce carbohydrates, including the building block of DNA. So the notion is like, it's like there was a soup of chemistry here, and by throwing this extra little piece, it made all the parts pull together
in
a certain way.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. But I don't know. But if this is going on at the same time, then to be fair, because my theory has always been that aliens sort of came here. They were in one piece when they got here.
Right, right.
So what I'm saying is, if I'm, for my theory to hold true, I would actually need this DNA to have been, you know,
fully sequenced or something.
No. I'm trying to get my theory straight now, because even all this science is now confused. This science is getting in the way of my theories.
You're consistent in your crazy theories.
Yes. Aliens came to Earth, right? And they spawned us. Mm-hmm. Now, this theory says that aliens didn't come to Earth, just the stuff came to Earth.
Yeah, just chemistry.
My suspicion is that back in the day, there was a battle between the aliens and this stuff, and they subjugated that stuff so that they could seed the Earth in their fashion. They didn't want some other random life form starting. They had their own mission in terms of building pyramids and all that kind of stuff.
Well, see, that doesn't work too well, because the theory of this chemistry is it creates DNA. And if you're saying...
What's the first thing the British did when they arrived in America back in the day? They started rounding up the locals because they wanted to be in charge.
My point is, we all rely on DNA.
Okay.
So if they had beat DNA, we wouldn't be here. Like, the they in that case would have to be something that's organized differently.
Well, it could have been like one of those science competitions on the other planet where the first people to get there. You know how all these things do these things?
Yeah, we'll be talking about a competition shortly, although it's not around science.
Oh, no, we will be. So anyway, okay, so, I mean...
But you had a bit of alien news that also would kind of doesn't go along with this, because it's a totally different theory. But
Dr. Stephen Hawking, apparently, and along with a Russian internet billionaire, well, I guess that means he's made his money on the internet. That was how I see it written. I can't remember
Russian
his name.
Oil billionaires and Russian internet.
I think in Russia you have
Russian. There's a lot of raw materials based billionaires.
I think what happens in Russia is how you've made your billions is a sort of a class system of its own. There's Russian oil billionaire. There's Russian internet billionaire. Then there's people who are like, yeah, we don't know what he was in billionaire. There were Russian billionaires after the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah.
So there in Russia, there's all those different competing groups, and it's all billionaires.
Whoever they are, when Putin calls and says, I need something, they go, we'll do that.
That's pretty much, we
don't want to mess with our billions.
Anyway, Dr. Stephen Hawking and a Russian internet billionaire have been pumping hundreds of millions into their own project.
It's called the Breakthrough Listen Project, isn't it?
Yes, which is basically scanning the skies for alien life.
I think Breakthrough is part of the title because it's capitalized.
Although it also could be B for billionaire. So I don't...
This is Breakthrough Listen Project. A $100 million, £75 million initiative to find intelligent life. It's essentially Contact, you know, the movie.
It is contentious, yeah. But what I'm saying is, because of the notion, and we've just made fun of, you know, Russian billionaires... I do think it changes. It changes in remember in Contact when Hurt character comes in and he's this secret sugar daddy to pump it up to the next level. That's what this is. This isn't some government project with a whole load of dudes doing it for their step 5 grade 6 salary. This is Russian billionaire. And if you're a Russian billionaire, once Dr. Stephen Hawking has burned through the first 100 million, we'll just get you another 100 million.
Sure.
Because that's the one thing. All these Russian billionaires have
billions.
Billions. They have this.
Hence the
a
name.
A well of cash, yes.
So in Contact, I remember, so people don't know, Contact is based on a book by Carl Sagan.
A bad Jodie Foster movie.
Yeah, it's been on TV recently. It does not hold up at all.
See, I think it was on The Ringer where they had a list of the 25 best, or it may have been on IO9, which is a Deadspin website. It was the best, 25 sci-fi movies, and Contact sat in there like number 7, and I'm like, seriously? That movie's junk?
I mean, like, as a plot, it's you can see how it held up, but it's written so...
Hokily.
Yes, 90s style. Like, you know, she... So anyway, they're listening to Jodie Foster.
And it's really...
SETI at the time was what it was called, Search for Intelligent.
I'm going to defend... Prometheus is a movie that I've hammered on many occasions in the last couple of years. To me... Prometheus' depiction of alien life sprouting in the universe, frankly, is far more realistic than Contact's, where ultimately they kind of leave it nebulous because they don't want to make a statement. That's why there's that whole relationship between her dead dad, Matthew McConaughey, the priest, and it's like, well, we don't know really what we think, so we'll just throw it all at you. That's very 90s. Because Prometheus is like, no, we were spawned by aliens from another planet.
I think you're supposed to take away, like, the characters are uncertain because there's no evidence when she comes back, but as a movie viewer, you're supposed to conclude there were things. Because remember, they have the bit where they figure out that the blank space...
Yeah.
On the recording was exactly the length, even though it looked like she was gone for a minute kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Contact is like a crappier version of Stargate, but without Kurt Russell.
So she's like, you know, it's all these antennae are listening for intelligent signs of intelligent life. And she just happens to be sitting on the hood of her car with a headset somehow tied into these stuff.
Right.
I don't know how she did that, but tied into that while suddenly the signals start coming in. And let me tell you, with the searching stuff, it's going to be some computer that recognizes a pattern.
Oh,
not a person listening, wow, there's a different sound coming in over the airwaves kind of thing.
Well, apparently, and I'm now gonna open up my device. What Dr. Stephen Hawking's project does is it looks for something called FRBs, which are fast. Wait, I'm sorry, I've lost it now. I'm trying to do this on my phone. They are fast radio bursts. And so basically, it's a radio signal from a planet, a galaxy someplace. a long way away, and it therefore is supposed to be an indicator of some sort of intent.
Yeah.
So because the argument is well, these things are also produced naturally. So people who don't want to buy into a claim that this is evidence of alien life will say, well, there's all this kind of stuff floating around the galaxy anyway.
Yep.
That is the argument. Yeah. Whereas, you know, according to these guys, they believe that this is a signal of stuff going on in other galaxies. And therefore,
it could be. Just some more details on that. These bursts last only a few milliseconds.
Yep.
And because our telescopes can only monitor a small area, they don't, you know, you just have to catch it. And this is the reason there's a story out, because there's been a couple of dozen of these things going on.
Yep.
The reason this one's interesting, because it's repeated, it's come from the same general direction, and so now it's like, well, wait a minute, you know, like, it's one thing if you get a burst, because, you know, one of the things they say is things like supernovas and all the things that result, quasars and all the, can result in radio waves, and so when you get a big burst of radio energy, that doesn't necessarily mean it's from a person, but it's like discerning some patterns. And I don't know if it's in this article, but there's one that basically says, of these things like this we've detected, it's hard to explain, but there's a mathematical
relationship. Don't worry, I'll dumb it down for our listeners.
There's a mathematical relationship to the frequencies or distances or something like that, that they're all multiples of some weird number, like 185 point something or other like that. And you plot them out on a chart, and you can see they go up a line. And it's like, well, why would that be? There could be a natural phenomenon, but there's none that we're aware of at this point that would have resulted in that.
The argument always is that it's a natural phenomenon. And like I say, Forbes ran an article that basically said these are the five reasons why Dr. Stephen and his crew, the Russian guy, they're full of it.
Yeah.
One of them is the fact that because it's so regular, it has to be natural. That's actually one of the arguments that Forbes makes.
Right. So in theory,
I'm sorry. The signal is variable. The energy density, signal strength, and time intervals are all irregular, evidence of a natural phenomenon. Now, to me, that's a jump in logic right there.
That's weird.
Yeah, exactly.
But I thought the whole point
They also make the argument that because the FRBs are 10 to the power of 19 times stronger than humanity's strongest transmissions, they're all at least that powerful, and so therefore it can't be a sign of alien life. And right there, that statement, as you know, got my back up, because that is already presuming that alien life is going to be like us. These could be like mega beings, like Superman.
Yeah, like they're like 200 times.
They could be 10 to the power of 19 better than us. Yeah.
I would say it would be a very crowded planet if that was the case.
Yes. So, I don't know. A couple of articles in a lot of mainstream media, this is not like bloggers, ran with it like, hey, these guys have discovered something. Who knows?
All right. So, out of the two theories we put out here.
No, I think you can get both.
They're not competing theories. I don't mean, well, they're competing in a way that I'm going to have them compete here in a second.
All right, let's try me.
So you've got the ice theory, that ice stuff brought the building blocks of DNA or catalysts for DNA.
Yep.
And you've got the theory that this signal is a sign of alien life. Which is more likely to be true?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, I mean, my gut reaction is to go with A.
Yeah, that's a relatively straightforward chemistry thing. This one has got like a lot of different things going on there.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think B could easily be a sign of it. Again, I mean this with a straight face. I think humans find it difficult to conceptualize life in a form unlike us. You know those episodes of Star Trek where they're all on the bridge and then there's just this voice that goes, crew of the Enterprise, we will... Do you know what I mean? And Kirk's looking around and Spock's going, there's nothing on the sensor, Captain. Well, there you go. That's alien life. But we can't handle that. We immediately dismiss it because it doesn't look like us or like our dog.
I'm tempted to go. Have you ever heard the Bill Cosby routine when God appears to Noah?
No.
Noah. It's like this whole like thing, like this voice coming up and saying, build the art by X qubits. But now you can't tell a routine about
it. I haven't heard that routine. I doubt I will be hearing it at the moment either.
Bill, it's pretty funny, but you can't hear, you can't do Bill Cosby bits anymore.
No, you can't, no. And frankly, Bill Cosby and Noah are in the same sentence. You're just looking for trouble if you go down that road. So anyway, there you go. Yep. See, science advisor of the pod there.
Yep.
Giving us evidence of alien life. I'm with you all the way. Thank you for that.
Speaking of competitions.
Speaking of competitions, I found another article that was of interest to me. Only because, well, so I found it in The Guardian that a British schoolgirl was named the first non-Japanese winner of a haiku contest.
Yeah.
So a British schoolgirl inspired by an autumnal stroll across a newly mown lawn has become the first, has become the first non-Japanese person to win a prestigious haiku competition. Kid was 14. Here is her winning haiku. Freshly mown grass clinging to my shoes, my muddled thoughts. Now, when I read that to you...
You got to do the breaks. I think you...
Oh.
Put another break.
Okay.
Because people don't know haikus are...
No, I was going to get to that.
Well, yeah, no, but we don't have to ruin that part. Okay, go ahead.
No. Well, okay.
It's three lines.
It's three lines, and each line has a certain number of syllables. It's supposed to be 5, 7, and 5. So I'll do it again in true haiku fashion.
Right.
Freshly mown grass, clinging to my shoes, my muddled thoughts. So... On the face of it, that is a haiku.
Three line,
different syllables. So she is the first, I think she's the first English.
It's the first English speaker or.
Yes, something like that.
English language entries. So, you know, it's primarily, like I saw the numbers, the Japanese entries are much further. And it's sponsored by a Japanese tea company, which we'll come back to. They make bottled tea, or at least. They're showing a picture of her holding this bottle of tea. They make hot tea too. I don't know.
The haiku ends up on the tea. You know, I mean,
on the little bottle. Like it's like a little shrink wrapped. It looks like, you know, when you buy a green tea bottle, you know, nowadays an ST thing or something like that, but it's a Japanese version.
So I'm actually looking for now the controversy. I found it earlier on and I cannot find it. Do you have it there?
What you mean the setup?
Well, yeah, the fact that there's a problem with it. I thought I'd read it here and
it's she's two syllables short in each part. Like, so it's what the regular one's 5, 7, 5, and she's like
5, 6, and 5 or something.
No. There, it's a regular pattern. Freshly mown grass, 4.
That's 4.
Clinging to my shoes, 6.
Yeah.
So
she's gone 4, 6, and 4.
4, 6, 4, right.
So this is my problem with this. And I'm happy that the 14-year-old British schoolgirl won the competition and she's got her thing out there. To me, a haiku is 5, 7, and 5. So this didn't qualify.
Yeah.
So how can she win?
Yeah.
I mean,
listen, that's not the only problem with this whole thing. First of all,
I mean, that's a very major problem.
First of all, the fact that it's run by, like, there are literary competitions in the world.
Yes.
You know, Pulitzer, things like that.
Yeah.
You feel like you're going to fall. This is a competition run by a tea company, yes. Right? Like, so it's like Coca-Cola saying they've declared the great American novel. You know, we took all the entries of novels and we've decided that this is the best one here.
Can I go to the
side? So that's a little suspect.
Can I hear you on the sideline on that for a moment? Have you ever been to the cinema recently?
Yes.
And so you watch the movies and they have the ads and then they always have Coca-Cola now present the winner of their film competition.
Yes, right.
And two students have done a Coca-Cola ad. And I'm like, that's not a film competition. Exactly. That's just something from your ad company
raises the question as to whether this is truly an objective thing. And you do wonder, like, so then the entry. So first of all, she didn't win the whole thing. She won the underage bracket.
Oh, I didn't read that.
So she's 14. She beat more than 18,000 entries, which, by the way, is really not that many entries when you're talking about a global thing with a haiku. We can write off, which you'll write off some haikus.
Oh, because I've written some haikus.
But she only won the, like, under 18, under something or other age bracket. And so 18,000 entries, right?
Yep.
But 2 million people take part in the competition. And this year there were 18,000 in English. There was only 18,000 in the part she was in, the age bracket. I forget where it said the age bracket for her there. So in any event, it's definitely less. you definitely have to wonder, because they gave it to this English-speaking, if they were like, hey, we'd like to sell some tea in English-speaking countries. Let's select an English-spoken thing, and we got to grab this stuff. The discussion, the person who said...
What you're saying is she's the equivalent of like a 15 seed in the NCAA tournament. Yeah, won a ding-dong conference and is in, but she's going to get creamed by Duke in the first round.
Well, you think so, right. And so like the people describing this, which, listen, it's a pretty decent haiku.
Well, no, it's not, because it's not a haiku.
Well,
this is my issue with it. It's a pretty decent poem.
It's got some imagery there. But like the discussion of this is... Like, I'm going to quote from Pennington, who I think is one of the judges. This is a unique and fresh poem. The author is walking across a freshly cut lawn, and some grass gets onto the bottom of their shoes.
Okay.
Yes, that's literally what it says. We were aware of that. The subtly different colored blades of grass create random patterns. Think about life while walking across the lawn. The author comes to think of it as reflecting their own complicated thinking. The expression muddled thoughts is especially skillfully used. And this is like us gushing about fried chicken. I'm sorry. It's still...
There's some serious projection here, isn't it?
Exactly. Like, this person's really filled in the blanks of this thing.
Yeah, and again...
I feel bad putting the boot on it because it's a good poem.
I don't want to put the boot into Gracie Starkey. She seems very nice.
It's not Maya Angelou here.
She got a trip to Japan and everything. I'm really happy for her. But you're right. There seemed to be a lot of sort of projection of what it was about. Because she isn't quoted anywhere by saying that this is what it made me thought. Everyone else has said that's what it made them think.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's not a haiku.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just poetry. Yeah. And I'm not knocking it, but it has to be a haiku. A haiku's a 5-syllable. Here's one.
Do tell me of a haiku.
I did one here. Look, The Atlantic Voice. 5 syllables. Not just another podcast. 7 syllables. We're not Marc Maron. 5 syllables. Now, there you go. Now, okay, so
let's,
I want you now to be the judge and tell everyone what I'm saying with my podcast.
That's what I was about to do. See, what you're saying is that these people have a podcast, and it's not the Marc Maron show. And it's, you know, the people are somewhat, they're dismayed, but they're also happy that they're not Marc Maron, because Marc Maron's not a very happy person.
Okay.
So you can see the inner torment or dual emotions here of being not as successful as Marc Maron, but yet happy not to be Marc Maron as a person.
Yeah, that's an excellent interpretation. Mm-hmm. Why aren't I winning? I did another one about the show.
Mm-hmm.
Basement Studio, 5 syllables. Intellectual partners. Now, can I stop for a moment?
Yeah.
It depends. I have to be very careful because, you know, sometimes I really mash up words.
Yeah.
Intellectual could be anything. That could be anything from 3 to 6 syllables, right, depending how you say it. So Basement Studio, Intellectual Partners.
Yeah.
I've taken intellectual as 3 syllables. Yeah. So that would make...
No.
Intellectual. I've taken it as 5 syllables.
That's the 7.
That's the 7. Basement Studio, Intellectual Partners, both talking nonsense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again... You've
analyzed that, my friend. What am I trying to say?
It's another duopoly, maybe.
Yeah, that's the good word.
Duopoly is when you have a monopoly or duopoly. That's not the right word. But the tension between being intellectual and idiotic, which is really about our show. So, I mean, I think this really evokes it, that we're intellectual partners talking junk.
Wow, I just looked for 3. No, that's really good. Yeah. That's really good. Yeah. Wow, you've got... Wow,
I'm a little...
I'm a really good haiku poet. The fact that you call this
intellectual partners, it's making me a little teary, intellectual partners.
Well, I just meant that we were on the same level. Well,
the thing about a poem is once you give it up to the world, it takes a life on
it. It becomes everyone else's, doesn't it?
Exactly. So I want to take it as an emotional bond from you. I can do that, even if you were just trying to put 6-7 syllables.
So I was really put off by the fact...
If it had been 5, you would have just said like stupid partners or something like that.
Well, yeah, I would have found a different word. Exactly. I mean, then that's my thing here.
That's the thing.
I was really unhappy that the haiku competition didn't actually have, to me, the first parameter that something had to be a haiku. Mm-hmm. And there's a part of me here now that's almost like, yeah, these people don't really understand it, so we will sort of let them have a pass a little. Like, I don't know. I just, everything about it, I was like, it's like if you have a crossword puzzle, and because your word is supposed to be 9 letters, but the only one you can come up with 10, they allow you to write 2 extra letters in the last box. No. Yeah. It doesn't fit. And that, to me, that was always, to me, that's always sort of the magic of the haiku, that it is actually quite, it is that simply structured.
Yeah.
It has to fit in there. That's what makes it so Japanese.
So I took a poetry writing class in college. Yeah.
Oh.
And let me tell you, like a haiku is cake. I mean, like, come on, you throw in some syllables. You don't have to rhyme anything. You don't, you know, you can do whatever you want with it. There's a reason that you can rattle off.
I'm going to challenge you here.
You could challenge all you want. You'd be wrong.
No, I'm going to challenge you. Go ahead and finish.
Okay. So, but there are much more complicated forms. You want to write a sonnet? I forget even how that works, but that's like this iambic pentameter
that's
thing.
You got to cover all these difficult things.
There was a type, I can't remember what it was called. There was a type that I had to write that took up like about 2 pages, and you had to basically rotate the final words around so they would reappear.
Oh, really?
Like the final sounds of like each grouping, kind of like a sonnet. I don't think it's the sonnet that he had to do that, but you had to like make them all. That thing was torment. I mean, that took me hours and hours and hours to like pull together all the parts to make it work.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I've got more here that I'll bring out later in the show. Haiku's relatively pretty easy to do.
That's what I just said. And then you said you're going to challenge it. Poetry, now you're disagreeing with me.
Poetry, frankly, it's supposed to be a pain in the neck to write,
right,
as you've
that's
just
the
said.
Whole point. Yeah.
And to be fair with you, I find most poetry a pain in the neck to read. I mean, I'm not a poet.
And it's I like to do it.
Appreciate poetry.
Yeah, I think so. Like, you know, there's all these people who are like way into like British World War I poetry or something.
Oh, so
like
but I was one of those people. Because a lot of that is written where it's just written. It's basically just prose.
Well, yeah. No,
that's fine.
And that's
prose,
fine with me too.
But you've just written it on different lines. And that's all I can do is write it on different lines.
You know, when you take those types of poems, usually they may not have a fixed structure, but they have sounds and imagery and things that are designed to all couple together. And you know what I like to do sometimes when I'm just writing like things completely unrelated?
Okay.
Is you do like some alliteration in your middle. Like if I'm writing a memorandum or a letter to somebody, not a letter, don't obviously, an email to somebody. If you suddenly find yourself stumbling into something where you get like 3 C's in a row,
I'm
like, that's a big thrill for me. Like, I might feed that machine there and like be like, oh, how could I fit this thing in? It sounds cool.
It's funny. I'm often tempted to do that, but so much of it depends on the form I'm doing it in, because I don't want it to suddenly take over and someone reading, oh, why did you put that in? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It is. So poetry is one of those things that I don't want to say it's a dying art form. That'd be a real controversial jump for me to make. But in terms of all the different sort of things out there, reading, different forms of reading word, poetry is not what it was 500 years ago when that was a problem.
So much more of it now is in songwriting, right? I mean, it's obviously junk songs.
No, that's actually a very good
some
point.
People write songs. Like, you know, they talk about like Bob Dylan songs essentially being like a poetry put on top of music. But there's a lot, even modern, like some of the best independent rock and things like that have real lyrics that you go, okay, that's got cool turns of phrase and the like. And
yeah.
I mean, it was David Byrne from Talking Heads who basically said that the reason for lyrics was to keep people actually listening to your music. Like if you took all the lyrics off of rock songs, nobody would listen to a whole song. They'd be like, okay, got it. Moving on. Whereas if you throw lyrics, people want to hear what's coming next.
I don't disagree, but I'm also going to say you could make a case the other way. Poetry as an art form was beginning to suffer. So, you know, teaming up with music was a good way to save poetry.
Yeah.
So I guess it depends. If you're a lyricist out there, I think it depends if you're a decent lyricist or you're not. Yeah. Like, I mean, to be entirely fair,
most stuff had the verse chorus structure, and then so that you have in rock and roll. So you are almost working a fixed structure. You know,
I would love. I'm just picking a song that nearly everyone knows. We have discussed on this show. What's the last song on Sgt. Pepper's Day in a Life? Mm-hmm. I think that's a great song. But it's interesting when you, with what you've just said, it would be interesting for someone to pass that to me on a sheet of paper just to read it.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
And it would be interesting. Like what I'm about to say, just and also that song is helped by its sort of almost sort of mystical, out of this worldly imagery, that would work as a poem.
It's no accident that they say 4,000 holes in Blackburn, Lancashire. Like that whole, has a punchy, punchy, punchy thing going on there, and that's essentially poetry, right?
I always thought like limericks were the lowest form of...
Well, yeah, they're lower. Although I think it's harder to write
It's probably harder to write a limerick because you've got to make it rhyme, but the fact that it rhymes is sort of like, it's rhyming. Because when you're little, you just think poetry's supposed to rhyme.
Yeah.
But I will say this about the haiku. Because I rewrote one of these when we, you know, after we spoke, and I think there is more to a really good haiku. And I know we've made a joke about people projecting meaning onto things, but even within that form, I think a really good haiku sort of jumps beyond that form. Whereas I like writing them because it's just that it's nice. It's like color. It's like a coloring book.
Oh yeah, yeah, no. A really good one is not just the syllables. A good one is like, wow, you know, like they encapture a moment or something.
So anyway, congratulations to Gracie.
It does say she wins a cash prize, but it didn't say how much.
Gracie, and she got a holiday in Tokyo, and she lied to everyone, all her buddies, to say that she was off on a remote spot in Wales.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's like a Survivor thing. You can't tell people when you've won.
Schoolgirl winner. On her way to a tent in Wales, but really Tokyo. There you go. Boom. I just made that up. See?
We'll check
the syllables. But my first line was not six. Anyway, congratulations, sir. We don't mean to put the boot in, but at the end of the day, you know, you're a fake. Okay, let's move on.
Talk about a hurricane.
Yeah, we had Hurricane Irma was here.
Yeah. So I had a personal experience, not necessarily directly with the hurricane, but a hurricane affected experience. So
share it with our listeners.
Tell the story because it's a pretty good story.
Okay.
So, set the table here. We're recording this on Saturday,
the week after the hurricane.
Essentially, a week after the hurricane basically arrived in the Florida Keys last Saturday.
Yeah.
So let's just say on a Saturday, made its way up on Sunday into the west coast of Florida. And so if you could picture it, like people who don't already know, it basically ran from east to west. It was coming in along the islands, you know, Puerto Rico, Cuba, all those, you know, really devastated St. John's and the
Virgin Islands. Although, to be fair, and I caused a lot of controversy in my home with this next statement.
Good. You could do it again.
A lot of those islands are a bit of a dump beforehand.
St. John's, not a dump. Like, they had some serious problems, St. John's. Anyway, so then it basically makes a hook, goes upright. And the big thing is, as it was coming up, everybody knew, like, the weather forecasters knew there was, you know, high pressure coming out of the left. Well, it's because that's a general trend of things, you know. Like, but they knew that things were coming up, so they knew this thing was very unlikely to make a direct path underneath Florida into New Orleans or Texas or things like that. Like Hurricane, well, Harvey came a different way, but in any event, they knew it was going to make a hook right, but they didn't really know where, and so you had a weird thing with Florida sticking down that you're like, it's going to run up the East Coast, could run up the West Coast, it could, you know, like there was a very, it basically had the whole thing covered, and ultimately covered everything, and it was initially thought Miami. You know, that was going to be because that's East Coast.
Yeah.
It's going to run up the East Coast. They did a lot of evacuation early. Got closer to the date, and it ends up going up the left-hand side. Setting the table just for dates and things like that. So myself and senior scientist, who also happens to be my brother, had already had scheduled plans to go down to the west coast of Florida, north Fort Myers, which is around Fort Myers, obviously. It's just north there. South of Tampa, in the Cape Coral and Naples are around there, and
big resort,
Sanibel
big
Island
resort town.
Is very close,
like so
there.
Much of Florida, but a big resort.
Yeah, and retiree.
Like retirement.
North Fort Myers itself isn't much of a resort, but like it's enough inland, but it's only, you know.
I've been to the Greyhound track at Fort Myers.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's where Boston Red Sox spring training facility is.
All right.
There. We were down there because there's a vacant house from my family that it's
Fat Mice.
I don't know.
That's my Boston accent.
Boston accent. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, hey, look at that.
I'm just being nice. But
oh, all right.
So we're down there because preparing to sell it, and we had already had this scheduled plan to go down there and deal with like cleaning up some materials, talk to some realtors, and get things set up. So we were our flight down is on Wednesday before the hurricane's coming in, and the originally planned flight was Monday after when the hurricane's going to end up being there. We had set that up. Hurricane starts making its way there. You know, it's coming to Florida. We don't know if it's going to be close, far, blah, blah, blah. So we said, well, let's keep the trip on because, you know, even if it is coming that direction, we're probably going to want to get down there and just make sure things are in order. It's been a while since we've been down there.
So I thought that's why you went, actually.
No, not because of the hurricane.
I thought you'd gone on some sort of like mission of mercy.
No. It was already scheduled. But then at that point, it was like, well, you know, listen, if the hurricane is going to come there, we want to be there to make sure things are in shape. If it turns out the hurricane's not going to be there, well, then we should have just kept the trip. But as a backup plan, we added additional flights. Like, we just booked separate one-way flights. We kept our Monday return, but we also added a Saturday return.
Oh, okay.
So we had these extra one-way flights coming back up, and the theory being like, okay, well, if it turns out the storm's coming, we've got this Saturday flight. Definitely nobody was expecting any storm before Sunday, and there never was any real – up in that part anyway wasn't going to be up there. So that seemed like a good plan. By the time my brother lands on Wednesday night, they've canceled our Saturday flights.
Oh, yeah.
you look at the weather, there's not going to be any storm. There's no even hint that there's going to be a storm by Saturday, but they're basically wiping out every flight. Maybe they're just emptying the plane hardware or whatever they're doing. So they start canceling the flights. Basically, in fact, when we got there, we almost like basically said, well, let's see about turning around and going back tomorrow. No flights. Can't go back on tomorrow. Like, maybe there have been a couple of flights, but they're full, obviously, because a bunch of people evacuating on these flights.
When they cancel your flights in that situation, what's the money back situation?
They give you all your money back. They basically said you can rebook without a fee, or you could just take the money back.
Yeah.
So we didn't really commit to anything at that point because we had more than enough time. That was a Saturday return, and we had a bunch of time to figure that out. So meanwhile, we had rented a van.
Yeah.
To move, it was a Nissan Quest minivan, although it's pretty freaking big for a minivan.
Oh, yeah.
It's a weird thing. Like, I'd never noticed a Nissan Quest on the road, and now I'm seeing them everywhere. I'd never been in one, and now I'm seeing it. You know, fold-down flat seats. And the original thing was
I love a good minivan.
We were going to pack things up to throw out. You know, there's a local dump area that we're going to pack things up to maybe give to Goodwill. We're going to pack things up to ship them. You know, our plan ultimately, we weren't originally planning on taking anything from there. We were really just going to be like sorting stuff out and maybe shipping it, maybe not. So we got that van. So I think to myself, well, you know, just as a backup plan, because, you know, the storm may still not come there, and who cares? We'll just stay and take our Monday flight back.
It's actually true, isn't it? I mean, yeah.
So we haven't, like, we're not running away at this point.
Well, not at that point. Okay.
Yeah. So I call up Hertz, where I got in the rental. I mean, it was quite a reasonable, it was something like, under maybe $200 for like 5 days down there. It's a local rental.
So what day of the week is this?
So this is like, so we get there Wednesday night.
Oh, so it's Thursday, you're making this.
Thursday, I make a call to Hertz and say, okay, now what if I was to, instead of dropping this van back off at the airport, local rental, I'm going to drive it all the way to D.C. And they tap away on the things and they say it'd be $800 more.
Okay.
Which is not crazy. I mean, we're gonna get out of, like, if we take the van back, we're going to get out of our return flights, which, between the two of us and all these things, add up to practically $100 anyway. Plus, we're realizing, you know, a bunch of stuff we were going to ship included like some furniture.
That
was going to cost a bunch of money. And if we're taking the van back, we'll be able to throw it in the back of the van. So we're like, all right, well, we know that, but we don't have to decide what we're doing.
So we're 72 hours out from potential hurricane coming.
So we're still on Thursday. Meanwhile, we had booked somebody to come and deal with the appraisal of some property in the house on Saturday. And we were talking to realtors to come in and interview. And these people, like, to their credit, they kept up all their appointments.
Oh, really?
Like, so appraisers came by our house, went back home to board up their windows, and then came back to our house later that day on Thursday to to finish up the appraisal stuff. So we're getting on to Thursday. And by Thursday evening now, everybody's like, it's coming this direction.
Yeah.
So now we're like, well, this is sort of interesting. Still, we have the van, you know, worst comes to worst, we'll do just like I had set up there. So by Thursday night, I think we decided, let's plan to leave. And at that point, we're thinking we'll drive out on Saturday.
So you're planning to leave
We're going to drive. Yeah, at that point.
So because the flight's been canceled anyway.
So we don't have any choices. And so we got the van. We said, well, maybe it'll cost some bucks. So we'll leave on Saturday morning is probably the plan. And then,
so you're now like 60 hours out from hurricane. This is like, because I'm saying this is like a 24, like,
dim, yeah, exactly. Dim, so dim, on Saturday night, we said, okay, well, we'll get a bunch of boxes, we'll box up some things, and we'll start packing the car. And I told senior scientists, I said, this is going to take longer than you think on Friday. It's not that much to box up, but it's just a pain in the butt to sort things out and go through the entire, because now we're starting to think, okay, well, if we are going to leave because the storm is going to come here, I don't want to leave anything behind that I care that I lose. Right?
Because you weren't ready to board up.
No.
There wasn't any option. Let's just leave it. Let's just board everything up.
Gas shortages. Yeah. So I went by the shipping place on. I went by the shipping place on Wednesday. You know, like the local pack and ship place, and it said it was already closed for Irma for the rest of the week.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I think it's not because it's because a bunch of these are local business. Like, they'll be a family owned business, and the family's got to take care of their own household. It's not like they're run away, because like Staples and all the main places were still open, all the corporate type places. But there was no wood left. That you couldn't go to Home Depot and get a bunch of boards.
Oh yeah, that's all gone in there. I mean, it's like a snowstorm.
And all these places starting to have gas shortages, and so now this is also our worry, is that we're like, well, shoot, if these places are running out of gas, do we have enough gas to get from here in the van far enough away that there's gas again?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is like 24.
We're doing all kinds of calculations on the mileage on the van. We gassed it up on Thursday night, even though it only needed like 2 gallons.
You know who you are?
Squeeze so much gas into that tank.
You're Tom Hardy in Dunkirk. You're scribbling in chalk on the dashboard how many gallons I've got left and how many miles. And how long can I turn and run? How long can I drive parallel to the hurricane before having to turn north?
Trying to figure
out. Look at you, yeah.
So we get around, we pack, and then Friday now it's, okay, very clearly coming right here. And we say, you know what, we're going to leave today. So I call up the car rental place again, right? Call up Hertz to say, okay, hey, I do want to actually drop this off somewhere else.
Why?
What do you mean?
Just take it and tell them later. What, you think in the middle of a hurricane they're going to go, oh, van's not come back, put out an APB? Don't care. They're running for cover.
You're the worst economic. Like, if you were to do that and you drop it off and they go, oh, that's $5,000 extra dollars, you have no argument. You just moved it.
Yeah, but you've already called and found out it was $800.
I asked what it would cost. I didn't do it.
Okay.
So, well, see, and now you're going to miss the best part of the story here. So, guy is typing, you know, he's typing for like 3 minutes. And I'm like, man, what is this guy doing? He's going, blah, blah, blah. He's like, okay, that'll be $11.93.
Well, for the 800 miles?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's what it is. No, is it 600
miles?
And
I'm thinking to myself, maybe he said 1,193, because that would be sort of close. Like, that would be the 800 plus the 200 I paid already, plus a couple of bucks and stuff like that. And I said, well, let me make sure. $11.93. And he said, yep, $11.93. And we're like, all right. So we're thinking at this point, they must have like an algorithm that's built in there. When they want to move, because think about running a car rental, a national car rental is an interesting business because your inventory is constantly moving around.
I mean, it's not like
planes.
So
you have to incentivize people to do what you want with the stuff, or you're going to have to move it around yourself. So at this point, we think, you know what they're saying is, we just want everything to leave.
We want everything out.
If you will take our van out of Hurricane Path, we're happy to have you do that. So we're like, okay, great. This is what we'll do. You know, at this point now, the trip is getting cheaper because now we're going to get all the money back on our canceled flights.
Yeah.
Our rental is only $11. We're going to bring all the stuff we were going to ship, you know, and so suddenly like the whole trip has gotten half.
It's cheaper. And to be fair, it's also kind of exciting. Yeah. Because you're out running a storm.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were away actually until for some reason when you were away, I thought you'd gone to Chicago or something.
No.
He's gone to Florida. I'm thinking, what was he doing?
Yeah.
So I actually did write one haiku when I was concerned about you being in Florida in a storm. Partner in a storm, 5 syllables. Come back in one piece because, 7 syllables. The show must go on.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so I'm
and nothing to do with me. It belies that intellectual partners thing that I said before that you were.
Oh, this is more. That's an emotional appeal.
Okay.
Like, well, yeah.
So now you're saying that one's
don't get stuck down there.
Okay.
I mean,
so we take off. So we packed up and we put some furniture. I mean, the thing fit a bunch of things. And we take off on Friday night at 5:30 in the evening. And there was a lot of talk then. Again, there were a lot of gas stations out of gas. Mostly in the local things, but the Gas Buddy, like you could look up where they were out of gas and where they weren't out of gas. Most of the people on the West Coast who are evacuating, you know, they're local. They're not evacuating to go 1,000 miles. They're evacuating to go an hour or two away.
Okay.
So most of them are running up the West Coast past Tampa.
Yep.
And that's where, like, you know, bumper to bumper traffic. And so everybody kept asking me when we started driving, like, oh, was there a lot of traffic?
Well, that's what I thought. I mean, TV showed a couple of images, and I'm presuming it was, have you ever seen like that Deep Impact movie or Independence Day? I was expecting it to be like one of those.
People left on the side of the road.
People out there, don't stop. If your dog gets out of the car, it's game over for him. People driving on the road, which even when they close the road, I don't like driving on the other side of the road. I always worry that some idiot's going to be coming. I want to go. If we're all going in the same direction, that's fine. But I want to be in the lane that's permanently that direction.
Yeah. So, but because of the fact that we're ultimately going much further away, we don't have to go up that side. We actually go across, east, across Orlando. And we even took, like, not even the main highway. We took this other, like, you know, like a state route kind of thing. Through Orlando to Daytona. So, like, people would not want to end up in Daytona normally because they're going to get a bunch of the storm on the surge and things like that, and up through Jacksonville. And Jacksonville was heavily flooded. But because we're doing this all in the middle of the night, and we're actually like 24 hours in advance of the storm showing up at all. In fact, more like 36 hours at this point.
Yeah, the storm seemed to sort of slow down a little bit, like it must have stopped off.
Because the storm is only arriving on Sunday. Yeah. We're leaving on Friday, and we're just going to drive overnight. We're not stopping anywhere because all the hotels are booked anyway. So the nice part was another tout for the Nissan Quest. So when we do our first gas stop and we've been driving on highways and we calculate the mileage, 30 miles a gallon. 30 miles a gallon for a van full of stuff.
That's pretty good.
6-cylinder
van. I think that's very good.
I was like, all right, Nissan Quest, you're on the list if I ever have to buy a minivan. Comfortable drive and all that. So we go across like middle of the night.
What color was it?
black or brown.
Oh, so it's like you're on a mission. Yeah, it was exciting, wasn't it? Yeah, look at you.
And that's when I'm like pointing on the road. Oh, look, there's all these on quest. So we were, you know, we stopped and we were just doing a rotation. We drive like 3 or 4 hours each and we flip back and forth. And I think I put on Instagram a picture of Waffle House that we stopped at in South Carolina at like 4 in the morning or something like that. When the one place we did it, there was a lot of cars in Orlando and think where people were leaving, but it wasn't like bumper to bumper. It's just fast moving, a lot of cars. Orlando, by the way, I haven't been to Orlando since I was in high school. Have you driven through there? Like it's crazy the amount of stuff going on. There's like Steaming Mountain, like all these things that are non-Disney properties that have been built up around there, like flashing lights everywhere. Yeah. And there's this crazy. Anyway, so we go there, we go up to Daytona, we go up there. When we hit Charlotte in the middle of the night, or not Charlotte, Charleston. I mean, you don't really hit Charleston. You're like, you're going up the highway where Charleston comes in.
The Charleston
exit.
That became
bumper to bumper.
Okay.
Because everybody was leaving Charleston, which was crazy because the storm at that point was definitely not going to Charleston.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've had a lot of bad experiences with flooding and storm surge things. I think a lot of them were like, out of here. I overheard some people at the rest stop, you know, really nervous. And there was, you know, there was a gas station where like, you know, 20 people are online. Like, it was a bit dicey. But we were fine. And because of the mileage, we never really needed gas. For way up there, we went and got gas partly along the way. We arrive, we're heading up there, and we're getting pretty close. And so we could drive straight up to DC, but I got my brother in the car and I have football tickets for the UVA Indiana game. I'm like, well, shoot, Charlottesville's not that far off of the path. So we're headed up to Richmond. We could have kept going up, but then we're going to go left and go over there to go to. And the funny part is, we're actually going to be too early. And then this is where fatigue started to set in. Like, when I was a younger person, this would have been no problem driving overnight. And original plan was like, oh, you know, the other person will sleep, but you don't really want to do that. Like, you're trying to keep everybody awake. And we're playing like Name That Tune on Spotify and like playing all these songs. But when we got to, we're getting close to Richmond and it's like 10 in the morning or something like that. And I'm like, now I'm going to fall asleep and drive off the side of the road, you know? And so I told my brother, I said, listen, we could pull over in a rest area. We got enough time to kill. We could both get a little nap in. And he's like, oh, no, I'll drive. So I flip over to the passengers. We stop. I go to the passenger seat. I mean, within 2 minutes of me sitting in the passenger seat, I'm asleep. And then I realize he's pulling off into a rest area. And I'm thinking to myself, he might have driven for an hour. Now he's tired. But it turns out it was 15 minutes between after we switched that he was like, oh, no, now I'm going to drive off the side of the road. So we pulled over. We slept for like an hour and a half in the front seats of the van. Then drove the rest of the way. Went to Charlottesville, got lunch with some good friends there, Architect of the Pod and the person who I stole the Cure tape from.
Yeah.
You know, went got lunch with him and his wife, went to the first half of the football game, and then at that point I was like, oh my God, I'm exhausted. Got back to D.C. basically 8 p.m. In retrospect, we should have gotten Bonchon chicken. We were supposed to get on the way, but the senior scientist of the pod had not heard
the second half of the chicken
podcast yet, and so he was not aware of the merits of Bonchon chicken. And that was it. And the kicker was, because the van was going back to National Airport, he got a flight. Like, while we were driving up, he just called up. It was JetBlue, our flights.
Yeah.
Because technically our Monday flights had not been canceled yet, but obviously they were going to be canceled. So we weren't worried about it. And he called up and he rebooked the Saturday flight because we were still in transit. No. He rebooked the credit from the Saturday flight to take a flight out of DC. They didn't charge him a single dime more. Plus, he was able to return the car for me. I didn't even have to bring the car, because the next morning, on Sunday morning, he drove the car over. I didn't even have to take him to the airport.
So basically, you're on a mission of mercy that turned into the Great Escape that then turned into some beanie at a football game. That's basically what it sounds to me. Yeah. So my concern for you, I was concerned, and then it just incrementally just kept dropping. When I would text you and your plan was, oh, yeah, we're going to the football game. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, no, from a hurricane. The greatest threat at that point was us like driving off the side of the road.
Yes.
At that point.
Yeah.
It was very tiring. And then the kicker was, so on Sunday is when the storm is actually arriving. I'm back home, right? And we have a webcam in the house so that you could see most of the rooms. Like, it's not a very big house, and so you can see, like, living room, dining room, kitchen, all from this one webcam interior, just in case somebody had broken in there, you'd have a recording of it.
So, again, the house wasn't boarded up or anything?
No. So, those things also have a microphone. So, I got this up on the computer, and, like, starting Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, the bangs and the smashes against the house are getting louder and louder. Really? But you can't see any of them. I should have left more windows open so I could see things. I couldn't really, like, meaning not the windows open, but the curtains. I had curtains across most things. And I'm like, you hear bonk. You know, there's coconut trees. I don't know what's landing on top of the house, what's hitting the side of the house. And I kept waiting for the moment when the camera would suddenly pan because the house is blowing apart. It's magnificent. You know, like, and like, I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going to go on here. So at 7 p.m., I've got a computer, or maybe I'm watching on TV. The eye had started breaking down at that point, but where it's sort of the center of the storm was, might have been 5 miles away from this house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's right so there, going right, right across this thing.
You know.
And right then, the camera goes out, 7 p.m., and it's because the power went out.
Okay.
It's not because, like, the thing exploded. But now I have no, like, I've been watching, and I know what's going on, and suddenly I know nothing about what's going on. And then they had evacuated that entire complex because it's manufactured housing, so it's like truck and mobile piece, and they put them on flat things. So the county had evacuated everything that was, and so the kicker was, if we had stayed, we wouldn't have been able to stay in there. We would have had to go to a shelter.
I don't want to deal with that.
And then, and then, of course, nobody's flying out until, like, Wednesday, Thursday, and, you know, the power's out. And as far as I can tell, the power's still out because the camera hasn't come back on. But our neighbors, the neighbors down there, have sent us a couple messages saying, house is fine. There's a lot of, I don't know if there's any trees on this property down, but there's a lot of trees in the complex, but apparently the houses don't have suffered any damage.
I personally think, I mean, I sometimes wonder, I watched a lot of CNN while this was on, because there is something vaguely addictive about it, especially the way they do it, and they've got the graphics going, and the experts are coming.
I mean, it's a little ridiculous. The people standing, like, I could do with less of that, like the people standing out in the rain,
that's not
being
very
like, whatever,
yeah,
like, oh, there's surge here, but like the, when the real meteorologist comes on and talks about what it's doing, where it's going, you know, they had that whole thing because the way it was rotating, it was emptying the water out.
And then it was gonna, and then it always got to come back, as they kept saying, everything that leaves is coming back. Exactly. And they would keep saying
it didn't
that.
Come back nearly as strong. I mean, obviously there was definitely some storm surge, but it could have been a lot worse.
They did interview some people on the islands who had said, in any of the islands there, who had said that they'd elected to stay, and then they interviewed people after the hurricane had come and gone, and they'd said they'd elected to stay, and they all said it's staying in the house while it goes by is that, you know, people are going, all right, you know, all of us in life tend to sort of, especially in those moments, we tend to either overemphasize something, exaggerate. But to a person, they all kept saying how, you hear the word terrifying. Like, it's the scariest night when it's dark and you're hearing just noises and you don't know what's going on. You don't know if something above you is being blown off.
You know, it got to Tampa and it was after midnight, and thankfully it wasn't too bad. But I was in contact with some people who were talking about, you know, that's scary, because it's one thing, like, by when it arrived at 7 p.m., there's still enough light out. And, you know, if you'd been there, you'd at least see what's happening.
I think it is different
but if
in the day.
One in the morning.
One in the morning, you have no idea. It's dark. It's
like, what would you do if something broke and you had to leave? I mean, how would you go anywhere? You'd be terrified.
And I think that's why I probably would have been the sort of person that would have gotten my car and evacuated. I had two positions during the hurricane in casual conversation. One, I'm staying, because I want to be there for when it all goes wrong. There's a part of me who thinks that if I've flown out 500 miles away, I'm going to spend the whole time like you watching the webcam whining about all my property. But then two, I also wouldn't want to be in a situation where I'm staying and then I'm forced to evacuate, because the last thing I want to do through any of these tragedies is hang out with a whole load of strangers. You know what I mean? So I couldn't. I'm sitting there, and so that was the big debate: was are you a stayer or a goer?
Yeah.
And so,
it's very weird, because, you know, I like to deliberate decisions to the nth degree, and you have no idea. I mean, it's literally practically flipping a coin. You're like, what am I actually better off doing?
Yeah.
You know, with the decision to depart, I mean, it's thank goodness we could hedge and we had the car, and so you could kind of wait till the last minute to decide, but it was still like, well, what's the right path? What do we do?
It's funny.
So net result was quite good, because we ended up taking away, like, basically when we left, we're like, okay, if this house blows up, there isn't anything in the house at this point that I'd be like, oh my goodness, we lost that. You know, photographs, papers.
Yeah, but your
personal effects. No, meaning if.
Oh, yeah.
Because
okay,
we packed
sorry,
up
yeah,
the
yeah.
car with enough, and it was, you know, a small portion of what's there. But everything that was left was, you know, old clothing, or, you know, like, the, you know, it just wasn't that important, and it wasn't a big loss. So
it's funny.
Wouldn't have been.
There are friends of this show. I don't know how often they listen, because they always complain it's too long. They had a relative down in Florida who wasn't leaving, and elderly relative, and they were very concerned. And on Thursday, I'm like, yeah, pay me a couple of grand. I'll drive down and get her. Like,
well, you know, one of the realtors we spoke to, it's interesting down there because so many retirees, they kind of keep working. So one of the realtors we spoke to is a pretty old, elderly woman. And her husband apparently doesn't get around too well. And she had said, like, somebody from the family had come down from Maryland to get them and get them to go somewhere else, and they wouldn't do it. And so, like, there was, like, a major blood. Like, the kid basically said, I'm leaving. I'm not staying, guys. You have to go. And then, of course, they live in that complex, so it was evacuated. So, I mean, like, that person must have had to leave, and I can only imagine what the conversations are now.
There is something I don't want to make, and I know sometimes it can sound I'm being also facetious and making light of it all, and I'm not. But it is interesting. You know, the great thing about living in this country, the thing when you live in America is, if you live in England, you're all in one country. And because of its size, any smaller country, you tend to have this perception of what's happening here, some variant of it is happening there. All, yeah. But it is interesting when you're here in America and we are, what's the distance? Is it what, 800 miles from the northeast down to Florida?
Well, our drive was 1,000 miles. So.
1,000 miles. You're a continent away. And so it is weird when you watch on TV. It's the same country, but you are somehow completely removed from it. And like I say, you know, hats off to everyone who lives, you know, all around the Gulf area, the hurricane belt. You know, we're all in the same country, yet I cannot conceptualize what it's like.
Well, it's kind of like, I grew up on Long Island, and some of those people that you mentioned also grew up on Long Island. They get their share of hurricanes, but it was always a little bit of a different experience.
What was the letdown? I've been in this area for two hurricanes. I remember, this is going back nearly 20 years, when Hurricane Hugo came. Hurricane Hugo was famous. It destroyed most of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, Hurricane Hugo's coming. We're leaving work early. And I'm sort of excited. I'm like, oh, we're going to get some bad weather here and I'm going to be in a hurricane. But I'm looking around me in the big city thinking, A, I can experience a hurricane, but B, at the end of the day, I'm going to be safe and I'll be able to go out and get something to eat.
Right. Well, and then
it didn't even rain. And I'm like, these hurricanes are a letdown. Now, I remember a couple of years ago, I think it's gone back a decade, there was Hurricane Isabel. Same thing. It's coming up the Chesapeake Bay, a flood in, everyone's got to be ready, high powered winds. I'll be fair. I didn't even lose cable. and to be honest with you, that's my kind of hurricane. I can watch it all, but I'm not having my life affected. But then the next day I can go, oh yeah, I can tell people back in England, yeah, I had to stay home during the hurricane. But to be fair,
we had done a Long Island. There had been Hurricane Gloria was right when we were at the end of high school.
Okay.
And my brother, senior scientist, had found I think it's a NOAA, National Oceanographic, whatever, it's
the weather
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They have a website or a web page that you can pull up like every hurricane for the past like 100 and some odd years, like all the unnamed ones even way back in the 1800s, and they have paths for them. Obviously, the 1800 ones are estimates and things like that. But the more recent ones, you know, they got an exact track. Well, it turns out Hurricane Gloria like literally went over our heads. Like, I had no idea. It was a big storm.
That's the one that killed George Clooney and Marky Mark, wasn't it? That's the one that story is.
Perfect storms, no hurricane. That was a nor'easter tying.
Oh, no, it was two nor'easters that came. It was a nor'easter and something else that came together created hurricane conditions.
Yeah, so that's the whole gig. Hurricane Gloria, though, the big fun with that is because we were in high school, was that all the power was out everywhere. And each day you'd wait, because they didn't say, school's canceled for a week. They said, school's canceled tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then so those other friends would come grab me, or I'd go grab them, and we'd go out for the night and hang out with their buddies and all that kind of stuff. And then the next day, I'd be like, oh, school's canceled again. Oh, let's go out again. So there were like four nights in a row where suddenly you were granted another piece of weekend.
Yeah.
Like, oh, let's go out. Let's go do something else again, you know, the other day off. And I think the parents were happy to have me out of the non-powered house anyway.
See, we do live in an area where we get some big snowstorms now and again, and I've become much better at looking at the snow and going, oh, yeah, this is 3 days closed or 5 days
and
closed.
And what do you do around here when you have a snowstorm?
Well, you go to a pub.
You got
to
go grab, you know, that's the rush on the places.
Yeah.
I mean, I was amazed down there. So when we did go to a grocery store, like...
Can I ask you, did you see any of that gouge pricing? Because there are all kinds of reports of gas stations selling water for $70 a case and beer going for $150.
I didn't see a single bit of that.
Yeah.
You know, there were definitely some places TV. Where, like, people waiting around for, like... We went to one gas station one of the nights beforehand where people were all parked at the pumps because the tanker had just come in and they can't pump out of that pumps the same time as the tanker's emptying. Yeah. And they said it was going to be half an hour to empty the tank into the things. And these people were waiting for their half hour. And we're like, well, that's, we only need 2 gallons. We're just going to go to dinner. But we went to the stores and the water was all gone and the bread was all gone. But like everything else was fine. And you know what? Do you eat that much sliced bread in your life anyway?
No.
Like, I mean, like, how much bread did people need? Or is it the case that bread's inventories are very short because of freshness issue or something like that? Why was the bread all gone and crackers? Like, there's endless supply of crackers.
Yeah, you know, that's
if you
the
really
thing
need
it.
Your
yeah.
carbohydrates, there's so many other options, yeah. you know. But we've done that, and then I forget. Oh, and then the story about buying beer. It was like, you know, you go to the store and you buy a bunch of beer around here for a snowstorm. And I think for those hurricanes when they were coming in, because we knew here, like, it wasn't going to, like, kill you or anything, but it was probably going to knock out power. And like, what are you going to do with yourself if you don't have beer? So you buy a bunch of beer and you're all prepared.
No, it's a good thing about
these
storms.
And I keep thinking about, like, people do that down in Florida. And, you know, where, like, the story you were telling about having to go out in the middle of the night. Can you imagine being drunk? And having to, like, go somewhere, like, suddenly, like, oh, my goodness, the half of the wall, I really wish I hadn't had those 5 beers.
I don't
because
know.
I'm not going to make it to the shelter.
I can't
drive.
I actually can't decide if that, there's people down there who think, I'm gonna get a load on, and then I'm going to experience the hurricane when I'm half caught. And, yeah, I can't imagine how surreal
like
that
kind of
is.
It's like a big event. It's like a concert festival. You
know, yeah,
like,
yeah.
You want to be, like, properly.
All the Jimmy Buffett guys. All right, so that's hurricanes. Oh, yeah. I have one last, before we get out of the show, I have one last IQ for you.
You never got around to that.
Here we
it's
go.
Not applicable anymore.
Well, it actually is applicable. this is the haiku. Eric podcast host, 5 syllables. Facing Hurricane Irma, 7 syllables. Fled like a coward. 5 syllables.
I fled like a wise person.
Yes, no.
I might still be down there now.
I was worried about y'all.
I appreciate it.
Oh, I was actually. I was like, oh, I didn't
My
know it was there.
Partner.
Now I'm worried about it. Well, yeah, intellectual partners. And then after that, I just went back to watching it on CNN and completely forgot
That's
about it.
That's the same thing I did. That was crazy. You got here. And then I was watching the thing I just ran away from on this.
Anderson Cooper, obviously, he's like the big talent on CNN. He would consistently go to the city where it was supposed to be coming.
He started in Fort Myers. Like, when I saw him at the beginning of the day, I'm like, oh my goodness, he's in Fort Myers. And then I think he realized there wasn't a lot which would happen. So he went to Tampa because everybody was afraid of the Tampa storm.
He would be in Miami. He would keep moving around to places where, like, oh, Anderson Cooper is where it's going to hit. And yet somehow the next time you turned on the telly, he'd move like the next stop down.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh yeah. And by Sunday, I'm thinking, yeah. He's always going to be where it's going to hit, but they're making sure that he's not staying there when it hits. Yeah. It was some other Joe reporter hanging out there with his hat on.
Now we're running on, but they show these people out in the storms, right? And a bunch of them are like, they're doing them from balconies and stuff at hotels because they want to be above the ground level. There was one guy.
Chris Cuomo.
Not that guy. It was another guy, a smaller one, who like, he was showing how, look, I'm in the storm, but don't worry about me, because if I take 2 steps forward by this post, there's no wind at all. And I thought to myself, I bet you the producers were like, dude, don't show that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, people think you're out there in the storm. If you can walk 2 steps forward and you're like, oh, look, it's nothing. It's not even raining on me.
It's funny though. And I got into this habit of, I'm watching it and I'm thinking, if I'm one of these dudes and I'm on for 25 minutes, What am I saying other than... Like, there was one section on a Sunday afternoon where Chris Cuomo was yelling at a guy with a 3-legged dog. And I'm like, yeah, he's got to win an Emmy for that. Then there was Anderson Cooper, who was getting a report from someone else. So they have that split screen. And the guy is talking about Transformers blowing up. And it makes those... It starts happening where Anderson Cooper is, and he keeps going, yeah, look over there, look over there. But the camera's not moving, and I'm like, dude, either show it to us or shut up, because we have no idea. Yeah. So, yeah, it made for some pretty...
Anderson Cooper's hair, right? So he's got that totally gray, light hair.
Yes.
And it was wet. Wouldn't you think a person with gray, wet hair like that, like, you would just see their skin, like, they would look like they were bald. Like, it just doesn't make it, I don't know, like, I don't know what, does he have a special storm treatment that keeps it, okay, it looks wet, but still it looks like a head
of
hair.
What's that spray that you put on suede to protect him? He probably sprays himself
like
with it.
You know, it was clearly damp, but it wasn't like, oh, wow, you look like you're matted down like a dog or something like that.
All right, so let's mark it down here. Eric 1, Irma nothing.
There you go.
There you go. That's been it. This has been The Atlantic Voice. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on The Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.